Welcome to Restaurant Influencers, presented by Entrepreneur. I am your host, Sean Walcha, founder of Cali BBQ and Cali BBQ Media. In life, in the restaurant business, and in the new creator economy, we learn through lessons and stories. Today, I have Andy Husbands, one of the greatest storytellers on earth, a man that I have come to know because of this beautiful cookbook, Recipe of Love. It's called Pitmaster. I remember in my barbecue journey, once I found this book, I said, one day I'm going to have Andy on the show, and today's the day. Andy, welcome.
Happy to be here.
Seriously, it's so cool. I got to go to your restaurant earlier today, spent time with Zach Oates, who's been on this show, founder of Ovation. But more importantly, I got to learn about what you've been up to, your career as a restaurateur, your career as an author. You put on cooking classes, you have whiskey clubs. I'm excited for the audience to learn more about what makes Andy tick.
Happy to tell you whatever I can.
Where in the world is your favorite stadium, stage, or venue?
Wow, favorite stadium, stage, or venue. Well, if I was to go with memory, which is no longer around, it's this place called The Rocket.
The Rocket.
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe it's still in another name in Providence, Rhode Island.
Okay.
I spent my formative years shooting pool and seeing unknown bands like Primus and Nirvana and small little bands like that you never knew. But there was a lot of, I mean, there's 100 other bands that I couldn't name, right?
Yeah.
That you don't know and I don't remember. So for that. But, you know, here in Boston, is it the MGM? It's attached to Fenway Park. And I recently saw a couple bands there and I really enjoyed it. You know, what they're doing today with music and sound is phenomenal.
How many did the venue in Rhode Island, how many did it seat?
It wasn't a seat.
It was a stand.
It was a dirty bar.
How many packed in there?
I think when it was packed, it was, you know, a couple hundred.
A couple hundred.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to go back there. We're going to go back in time.
Yeah.
A couple hundred. We're going to make it intimate. People that listen to this show, watch the show. We talk about playing the game within the game. Mm. Restaurants, such a difficult game to play. People that do it and do it successfully, but also find other avenues to do it, are people that we have on the show to share the secrets. You've done that. Yeah. I'm going to put you with the mic, TEDx style, and say, Andy, tell us your story.
Well, let's start with the premise that I disagree with what you started with.
Tell me. I love an antithesis.
People say, this business is so hard. It's like we're like patting ourselves on the back. Look what we do. you know, and of course, when I meet people from the business, you know, they're outside the business, my neighbors, I meet them, you know, like, oh, you must work all the time. You know, you're in the restaurant business. It depends on how you define work, I guess.
I love it.
I remember when I first started dating my wife, she's like, yeah, but you love being there. I'm like, yeah, but it's Friday night. I'd rather be with you. But if I'm going to go, I'm going to enjoy the heck out of it. So it's how you look at it and you get right with it. Sure, it's challenging, but man, I think being a medic seems challenging to me, or
sure,
a nurse. Those are the people who have hard jobs. I got a great job. I get to cook food and talk to people, and it's really cool. There are times and things that are really difficult, of course, but I just couldn't go through life walking around saying, I got such a hard job. And I know you didn't mean it that way,
yeah,
but that's kind of like, I don't take that premise. I take a premise of, I got a real good, challenging job.
Tell us about your challenging job, this challenging
well,
career.
So how did I get here, I think was your question, right? So I'll answer this. All I've ever wanted to do was cook. Since I was 14, since I was in fourth grade, I did a demo how to make donuts. That was in class. And I was making donuts in fourth grade.
Really?
By myself, latchkey kid, you know, no one around, you know, I was frying donuts. And it's something I'd always had a passion for, cooking. And then I started working in restaurants and I just thought it was the coolest people with the funnest thing, you know, and you get tricked a little bit, because what happens is, like, this is really great, you know, career or thing you're doing, and you stay up late, right? And you're like, this is great, I'm staying up late and meeting people, having a blast. But as you get more and more involved, you have to actually still stay up late, but get up earlier and earlier and earlier, and your days become longer. But again, I enjoy it. And I knew my path. My path was going to be, I worked in some small single unit restaurants. I went to Johnson & Wales. I was an awful high school student, and I was a superior culinary student and also food service management. I loved every minute of it. I loved this business and every part of it. Even the accounting. I love numbers, right? Like, these are just, I loved it. And then I worked for some really good single unit operators, most notably Chris Schlesinger, who wrote the book on grilling, which is called Thrill of the Grill. And you have to imagine, this book is great. Buy it now if you can find it. It was released in 1984.
That's like awesome.
Way before people were doing grilling and stuff, yeah. Right? So, man, it was an amazing time working for him. He taught me not just how to be, a better chef, but to be a man. And I don't mean that like in a macho male thing. I mean to be a good person and to be stand up and, you know, treat people well and take care of your team and things like that, you know. And all I wanted to be was him. And so, you know, he'd written books. I wrote books. You know, he opened his own restaurant. I opened my own restaurant. And I did that for 20 years. I had a kind of a fancier restaurant in the south end of Boston. It was a great living, a great job. But toward the end, I knew I was bored and I wanted to do something new. So I partnered with this guy. I never had a partner before. And we went after opening up a multi-unit barbecue restaurant. And that's how I get here.
How many units do we have now?
We have 6 today. I have one lease signed, so definitely will be 7. But I think maybe you could do 1 to 3 more next year, or this year, I should say.
Barbecue Smoke Shop.
The Smoke Shop Barbecue.
Smoke Shop Barbecue.
Yeah.
So Smoke Shop Barbecue. Where and why with the name?
You know, when you do things, sometimes you kind of regret doing them. Smoke shop, you know, this is before we have all these smoke shops now.
Before there were smoke shops. How's your SEO doing?
Yeah, right? I mean, it's a battle, but we get called Smokehouse a lot, which I don't care. You know, just come. Doesn't matter what you call us. It's going good, you know. We decided the name. We worked with a branding company called Black Coffee.
Okay.
I do them disservice by calling them a mom pop. But it's a husband wife team, yeah. And they are amazing. And what they helped us with develop our brand. I could show you this thing. I wish I had this document to show you. And you know what? I'll send it to you.
We'll send it to me.
We'll put it up.
Yeah, we'll put it up in the video.
Who we are and who we're not.
Cool.
And they put it together before we opened, and I still go back to it, and I still send it to people, and it tells you they nailed it by lots of interviewing and talking to me and figuring out and hearing my dreams of what I wanted it to be. And it's kind of almost like our guiding, you know, path, our map. And, you know, we wanted a strong brand that we knew we could grow. When I had my first restaurant, I knew nothing about branding.
Yeah.
So it's important. It's important to have a strong brand.
I love that you brought that up. It's something that I don't think, I know we definitely don't talk enough about on this show, but when you're coming up with a mission statement, one of the most difficult things is to talk about what are the things that we stand for, but the unlock comes for, well, what do you stand against?
Yeah.
What do you stand against?
I don't stand against anything. I mean, for my business, you know, we just want to be, you know, the best barbecue restaurant we can be.
What does it mean to be a bad barbecue restaurant?
Crappy barbecue, you know.
So you stand against crappy barbecue.
Yeah, there's just people, you know, but it's all subjective, right? So I certainly will never ever say I'm the best. We'd like to be a close second or third to the best. You know, you could tell I'm not from the South. In fact, I will honestly tell you, I never had a real rib, real pulled pork until I was 22 years old.
Wow.
Working for Chris Schlesinger. I had a lot of catch up to do. It took a long time to get good at what we do. And, you know, we consider ourselves kind of tribute barbecue. So, you know, I've traveled the country many times in my competition life. And, you know, I do Texas style brisket. Would I say it's authentic? No. You know, I also make kimchi. I would not say that's authentic.
Mm-hmm.
But we want a place so that people, you know, feel comfortable and feel welcome. Our policy is to treat everybody like grandma, right?
That's a great policy.
You know, which is nice because grandma's not always right. And you can tell grandma to pump the brakes on the drinks, you know? So it's like you treat her with love and reverence, but, you know, you still need to, be respectful, yet everyone's got its place kind of thing.
when you wrote your first cookbook, what was the inspiration?
The first cookbook, which is called Fearless Chef. I just kind of want to, always my goal is from the classes I teach to the cookbooks I write, I want people to walk away going, I can do this. I want them to go, yeah, this is doable for me. I want them to feel comfortable. And I think sometimes people think things are so complicated, and they're really not if you just kind of practice, you know?
You remember the first time that you started going all in on barbecue?
What do you mean by that?
When you found out that this was kind of a bigger calling.
Well,
I mean, you can't write a book like that, do the work that you do.
Yeah.
And not say that there's a deeper,
I mean, I have a
deeper love for the slow.
I think a lot about, that's a great question. I think a lot about it. So, you know, I've been competing. I'm a member of a team called IQ. We're a very successful barbecue team built of a bunch of guys, and we're all best friends. I really want to point out that I'm not the lead guy. It's a guy named Chris Hart. He's the guy I wrote that book with. He's a tech guy. He's my best friend. He's a great dude. But people think I run it. I don't want anyone to think that. I'm just back there, you know, helping out as best I can. But as we started competing, we kind of kept going down the rabbit hole. And at some point, I think we kind of poked our heads out and said, oh, wow, we're in this, you know, and
we're
definitely,
deep, we're,
and that was definitely before we won the world championships. But, you know, we just kind of realized that we were all very passionate about it. And that wasn't just about when, as we were talking earlier, barbecue isn't just about the ribs, you know, the pulled pork. It's about a life. It's about a style. It's about people. It's about a community. You know, if you think about it, if you were to come over, you know, and I'm like, I'm going to cook a brisket for you. And you're like, that's great. Super psyched. Well, I just spent 14 hours of my time into that meal.
Yeah.
Like, that's like love. That is cool, right? To put that energy and that time into something, you know? So I always love it if you know Tuffy, Tuffy Stone. Whose real name is Percy or something like that.
Percy?
I'm not sure his real name is Percy, but it's something like
that. It's not Tuffy, though.
I'm telling you, it's not Tuffy. And I love you, Tuffy. You know that.
Huge fans of Tuffy.
But, you know, his thing is nobody cooks a brisket for themselves. Right? Now, crazy guys, me, you, we might do that.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm going to cook a brisket this weekend just to goof around. And that's kind of a cool premise about barbecue is that it's not about you.
Yeah.
I'll cook a steak myself. But I don't cook a brisket for myself. I cook that for somebody else. So like you're doing this thing and you have to extrapolate and think about then the community and the people and the history, right, of barbecue in America. Man, super cool.
Can you share about barbecue culture? I know the beginning of this book, you have Amy Mills and Mike Mills of the legendary 17th Street Barbecue, who I've been so fortunate all the podcasting that I've done, all the shows I've done, was able to sit down with Mike Mills and Amy Mills, both together while he was still alive. And he actually visited our restaurant in San Diego. And the things that he said, the curiosity that he showed to me and the reverence of just the fact that we were willing to be crazy enough in San Diego to cook the craft. But he cared.
Yeah.
And there's a reason why you put them in the beginning of the book. Can you share that with us?
Well, they kind of mentored us. You know, I miss Mike a lot. He was so good to us. And I love the fact he always learning. You know, I was making sausage one time, and one of the ways I do it is I actually, you know, when I'm emulsifying, I add water. And he was like, he just couldn't wrap his mind around it. He's like, it's going to be wet. Water's going to. I'm like, no, watch. It's going to emulsify, and then it's going to, you know, make it juicy, and you'll see. He was so, again, curious. I love that about him. You know, but you'd just be sitting there waiting for those little barbecue-isms that would come out of his mouth, you know. I just wait, and I loved it. The community is really fascinating. It's really, I feel like, you know, everyone's a cousin. We kind of all know each other. And,
yep.
And we, if we don't know you, we know somebody you used to compete with or compete against in the competition world. But even in the restaurants, we all kind of know each other and watch each other and know what each one's doing. I really think it's neat. And I think, you know, what's really neat is, you know, you can go anywhere and just be like, hey, this is who I am. Can I check out your pits? And they'll be like, come on back, you know,
yeah.
Carve you off a little something, you know, show you something. It's just like family. I think it's about like respect and understanding. You know, we all do different things, and it doesn't matter to me who does what better. That's kind of not really the point. The point is more like that we all are kind of striving to do the best we can.
Can you share a story about winning the world championship?
Sure. So I'll tell a story, not about that. I'll tell a story. This is a more fun one. The world championship is bonkers. I mean, I'll tell you that, you know, when you're at the Jack, the first year we went there, we made the rookie mistake of really enjoying the gentleman Jack. And, you know, it's like the Super Bowl. You got to be focused. We did not focus. And our team was notorious for being unfocused. But we were in Kansas City at the Royal. It's 500 and something teams. And the team next to us was from Texas. And they were giving us such a hard time. What are you Yankees doing here? You need to go home. You don't know anything about brisket. You don't know anything. And it was nonstop, and it was pretty intense. So the first night is the Open. And if you haven't been to the Royal, the first night is the Open, and there's a party. And it is the biggest party you've ever seen. 30,000 people with open containers walking around. And we really, really, really focused on that party. Man, I think our friends from Jamaica were there, the Jamaican team, Gary, and they had white rum. Have you ever had that Jamaican white rum? And it was just crazy. The next morning, it looked like the scene from The Hangover. And everyone's kind of like trying to come to, somebody's missing, there's cans everywhere. And we have a schedule that we're supposed to follow, and that didn't really happen.
Oh, no.
And we came in. I should say, how we came to was at 7 a.m. when quiet hours are over, the team next to us, the Texas team, took their speakers and turned them toward us and played Flight of the Valkyries.
Come on.
As loud as they possibly could. And so it was like, dun, dun, dun. I'm like, oh, my God, you know. So we lost. We came in like, I don't know, I think it was 80 teams in the Open, and we came in 70th. Came back. We're all hungover. We got in a huge fight with our team. You know, we're all arguing with each other and who screwed up and who did what. We finally get it back together. You know, we're all brothers. You know, we love each other.
Yes.
But, you know, after the fight was over, crack a beer, sit down, like, let's redo this. You know, team Chris Hart gets us to focus. And like, okay, let's go over the plan for tonight. We focused. Still had a beer or two, but focused. And we would, you know, you compete all night again. Everybody does their shifts. Everybody's doing right. We think we're doing good. We do all our turn-ins, all the sides. It's like 7-8 categories. We get into the awards. They take like 3 hours because they're giving everybody and their cousin an award for something. And then they start doing the awards in 20th place. When you have 500 teams, it takes forever. We got no calls. Not one call. And I'm videotaping this whole thing, and I'm videotaping Chris, and he's yelling at me, turn that camera off. Well, you know, very colorful language also. And the last call of the day before the grand champion or reserve and grand is first place brisket. And I'm like, I'm gonna get Chris on video losing this whole thing. So I start filming him, and he's like growls at me, and then they go, and the winner is, and you hear this, and there's all these teams. I smell smoke, I did this, yeah. I did that, and and it was IQ and pandemonium.
Come on. You have that video?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, we need that video.
I
have
it. I can show it to you.
Yeah. We're getting that video. If possible, it's going on this episode. Oh, yeah.
I can show you that. That's phenomenal. Mikey Z from Motley Q is in it prominently. He's a good friend of ours. He used to get in. And it was just like, it was the craziest, most, you know. So when you talked about what's it like winning, that rush,
yeah,
that feeling so down, that feeling all that work for 2 days and the hangover and the drinks and the laughs and all that stuff and just boom. And, you know, we have Chris saying on tape, you know, I'm like, Chris, can you say something? And he's like, we just won brisket in Kansas City. And you hear a cow go moo, but use colorful language. And it was just an amazing moment. And you get this big golf check with a lot of money on it and a big thing. And we took that golf check and we took that award and we walked outside and put it on the Texas team table. and told him, this is what we know about brisket.
That's great.
But I want to tell you, had I needed salt, had I needed a Band-Aid, had I needed anything, that team would have gave us whatever we wanted.
Absolutely. So, well, that's true.
You know, people give you a hard time, but people aren't effing with you.
Yeah. What have you learned from the competition world that has carried over to cooking barbecue, competing every day for the hearts and minds of people here in Boston for barbecue?
Well, I think to get good at anything, if you want to run a race, you got to do the reps. So having done the reps for many, many years, it helped me get a vision of what I wanted to do. But competition and, you know, the way I like to talk about competition barbecue, it's like the Lance Armstrong of barbecue. It's like jacked full of stuff.
Yeah.
Needle full of stuff. That's great. And we don't do that in the restaurant.
We can't, right? Do that.
It's not. It's like what it's like is NASCAR. You don't drive a common person doesn't drive a NASCAR, right?
Yes.
But some of that stuff that happens in NASCAR trickles down to your Camry.
Yeah.
And so there are some tricks and some things, even like we do a reverse rub.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we'll sprinkle a little bit. No, I'm sure plenty of people, it's not like I created it, but we do that on our meats. And so it gives it that little, as you know, like a fancy restaurant, when they put a little like Maldon salt on the steak, you know, same kind of thing. It gives it that pop, you know? And so that's something that we did in competition that we now do in the restaurant. So there's other things like that. How we do our chicken is very similar process to how we do it in the restaurant. I'm not at liberty to go into that, but yeah, so we've used a lot of the tricks and things that we do.
When you think about barbecue, I mean, we're here, it's the Toast sales kickoff. You had the Toast sales team at your restaurant. They're sponsors of this show. We're Toast customers. I just interviewed Aman Narang, the new CEO. You and I are both in the craft barbecue game, running restaurants on different sides of the country. But we both made decisions on technology to go with Toast. Can you share why did you make that decision?
Well, I mean, I'm going to tell you, Toast is intuitive. It's easy. They make it easy. I think you could put somebody in front of it. I think I could put my 5-year-old daughter in front of it and she'd figure out order herself some French fries.
Yeah.
I think she could do that. That's really nice. But the impetus, the reason was during the pandemic, there was a beer garden being built next to us and they wanted us to do the food and we needed QR codes. The company I was working with that had my systems before was like, yeah, we think we can do that. And if we can, it costs $7,000 or some number. And whatever that number was, happened to be very close to the number that it would cost me to bring on Toast. And I'd always wanted to do that.
Yeah.
And I also did the math because I have investors, right? So I've got a fiduciary responsibility, not just to my investors, I have a fiduciary responsibility to everybody in my life. That's the people I work with. That's my family. That's my investors. Everybody, I've got to do the right thing, right? And I got to be judicious with the money I spend. And I was looking at it and I'm like, I figured out the people that, all our orders were a lot of those orders during the pandemic, especially were coming in through an iPad and then you enter them in. Well, just think about all the mistakes we made, first of all.
Yeah.
There's no way we didn't make mistakes doing data entry, right? So much pressure, so many orders, get them in. But also, I had to pay that person. So that math also happened to be about the same amount of money annually that I would have to put in to get Toast. So it just made sense. And I knew how great they were. I knew they were a Boston company, so I was psyched about that. And in retrospect, now that I've onboarded with them, they've opened up my world to other things that I can do, right? So we're onboarding a CRM loyalty, right? And it's just easy. Whereas, gosh, if I'd ever wanted to do that with another company, they'd be like, yeah, no, you can use ours.
Yeah.
Right. Or use this other third party company, Olio or whatever. And, you know, I don't know them. No disrespect to them. But why got to hire another company just to get another company in? It doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Right? I think one of the cool things that you shared when we were meeting this morning was the fact that it doesn't feel like a vendor.
No.
It feels more like a partner where you actually are excited. They had Jose Andres present at one of their Spark events and you're logging in and you're like, I can't believe I'm voluntarily wanting to be a part of community and connection. Sure. You know, knowing what Jose has done, and I watched the same presentation, wanting to see. It's interesting because we don't expect it. You know, being in the restaurant game for as long, you know, my previous point of sale company, I made the joke that nobody contacted me until I made a toast unboxing video.
Yeah.
Once I made a toast unboxing video, all of a sudden I had these three different executives, you know, on LinkedIn going like, hey, Sean, you know, what's going on with your point of sale? But that's not the right way.
No. And I would say, you know, I think those guys, I'm not going to name them, but they're like Polaroid. Well, like Polaroid woke up one day and was like, oh, geez, there's digital now.
Yeah.
You know, like these guys, taxi cabs, all these should realize that this technology is coming, right? It's coming. Luckily, technology hasn't taken away, you know, pitmasters, but, you know, but it is coming. And so, like, people need to be aware. And I just, so, like, you feel like they're a partner. They listen. I'm a vice president of the Massachusetts Restaurant Association, and one of the women that's on my board, she's also on, I think, some kind of consumer board or something like that with Toast. And she's always, you know, talking to them and like giving them suggestions. Yeah,
you know Kathy. Of course, I know Kathy. If you know Kathy, you know Kathy. Oh, we love Kathy.
She's great. So yeah,
Turner
so,
Seafoods.
Yeah. She's great. You know, it's just, it's neat how they are, you know, partnering with us. And it's just so smart. And then the last thing I'm going to say is, I don't know, you know, this is how my business works and other businesses work this similar. But God, those companies, dinosaur companies, it costs you $25,000, $35,000 to put their systems in.
Yeah.
Now I got to pay back 1.25 on every dollar I spend.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a giant number. So the buy-in with Toast is so much cheaper also. And, you know, they should have known that like there's these pinch points and I'd rather spend that extra money. Let's just say the delta is 20,000. Let's just say 15. I don't care whatever number you want. I'd rather spend that 15,000 on the customer's experience.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause they don't experience anything from a screen that I punch in some stuff.
Yeah. What does it mean to be a pit master?
It's like, what does it mean to be a chef, right? You know, look, there's all different levels and all different types. And, you know, I have friends, my friend's son, they call him a pit master, and he is.
Yeah.
Right? He's out there trying to do his thing. I think he's 12. And I think that's great. You know, for me, it's somebody who kind of, you know, knows how to run a pit, you know, and cook good stuff out of it. But I think, again, good is subjective. So somebody who likes to smoke meats, I think in the bear use of the word.
One of the things that we were discussing at your restaurant was, which was very refreshing to me, was you were talking about all your failures.
Mm.
You know, it's easy to come on a show for Entrepreneur and talk about all the successes of all the restaurants and all the cookbooks and all the things that you have going on, the followers. But a lot of the times we mess up, we screw up,
sure.
We do a bad job.
Sure.
Can you share some of the things that you've learned going from one restaurant to two restaurants?
Yeah. But I'll start off by saying, listen, I've had a bunch of restaurants in my life and, two of them failed miserably. One of them, I lost hundreds of thousands of dollars personally. And I think what's important is when you have mistakes or you make mistakes, especially if you're in a position of seniority or a position of, you know, you're at the top, you got to look in the mirror. You got to own that. So important to make sure you own those mistakes. Why did this happen? And you can blame everybody you want, but you have to understand you hired them.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, you weren't managing them or whatever that was going on. So really it's important, I think, to own it and to think about kind of how things happened. And that's going to help you go farther in life. I think it's really, really, really important. For me, we were talking earlier today is, you know, look, I like to say, if I didn't own the place, they'd fire me because I don't know what the hell I'm doing. So I'm continually trying to figure out what to do and how to do this. In the beginning, you know, we ran it as a single unit and we're successful. When we had two of them, we were successful. When we got to our third, we started getting into what they call multiple units and or chains. And nobody wants to be called a chain, but sure, by definition, that is what we are. And it has to be run a different way. You know, you got to start thinking about like SOPs and NMROs, new menu rollouts, and all these things. You know, and like you gotta, and like how you do it. You know, like one of the things I loathe about my restaurant is like if I want to change something, like my old restaurant, I'd be like, I'd walk in on a Thursday morning and I'd be like, okay, we're changing the menu today. Here's 10 new dishes. Let's go.
Today.
Right? But no, now it's like, I want to change something. Like, well, that's going to take about a month and a half. And I'm like, ah, I'm going to kill you. You know, but because the people I work with, and Mateus, you know, I love you. He's so awesome. You know, he has got a whole strategy of how to put a new thing on the menu, and it's not that easy. So, you know, it's really how you run multiple units is really, really challenging and really, really important. You get it right. One of the craziest things that happened to me, which I didn't realize when I got to three units, is they would be like, I could see reviews be like, yeah, don't go to this one, go to that one. It's better. And I'm like, are you kidding me? It's the same freaking recipes. Like, it's, I'm like, they're comparing me to me. You know, on Wednesday, Andy's awesome, but don't go near him on Thursdays. Yeah. It's like, I'm like, oh my gosh. So, you know, learning to be more consistent, learning how to do things better, but it's been such a great path, such a learning path for me. It's so exciting.
Share a little bit about whiskey.
You ever think about whiskey? You ever think about whiskey and why barbecue and whiskey? You ever think about the words that people use for whiskey? Hot, charred oak, cinnamon, nutmeg, vanilla, smoky. These are all the same words we use in barbecue. It's kind of fascinating, right? And, you know, look, Japanese food, sake, made from rice, right? French food, French wines. There's a reason these things really pair well together. And it's a real thing about the history of America and how things were done and why they were done and why you see commonality in flavors. So for me, it's a no-brainer because it pairs so well. Barbecue is big and bold. If you ever fooled around with like trying to use like ginger or kefir lime or something like very nuanced in barbecue, smoke just crushes it. Unless you're doing like chilies and big flavors, you know, it's hard to get anything out. So you really need something to really stand against it. You need a big, bold drink to go with it. I mean, beer is great too, and I'm not knocking beer. And wine can be great too, good Zin. Even champagne can go real well with a rib. But I think traditionally and kind of like just intuitively, whiskey goes really well with barbecue. So for me, I've always been passionate about my drinks, and whiskey is one of the ones I really love. And I've always been kind of just learning about it and collecting it. And so when I opened the first smoke shop, I knew I wanted to have a very large list. And I think we are Massachusetts' largest American whiskey collection. In fact, I know we are. Reach out to me. If I'm wrong, please let me know. I'm sure you'll let me know. But, okay, we're Boston. Give me Boston, at least.
Give me Boston.
So, you know, and it's great. A little bit of the 80-20 theory, though. We said it'll sell, you know, 20% of our whiskeys 80% of the time. But that's our job, is to teach our staff and teach our guests why these other whiskeys are great. I got no problem with Bullet and Jack and Beam and you know, all the ones that everybody can name. But there's some really fun, neat ones out there that you might want to check out. I don't know. So
every single week on Wednesday and on Friday on LinkedIn, we want you, the listener, you, the viewer, to join us. Tell us about your restaurant. We would love to feature you sometime in one of our shows, Digital Hospitality Restaurant Influencers, or our new show, Family Style for Toast. It's a chance for you to connect with the community. We believe that your story matters, and you've got to get out there and tell it. If you don't tell it, we can't know about it. Andy, can you tell us anybody in your organization that you'd like to give a shout out to? Entrepreneur, I know you have over 200 people that you employ and you take care of, and everyone wants to always name the entire org. But I'm scared.
One person. I'm scared to give a shout out listen, everybody knows I love you all.
Everybody knows.
But I'll give a shout out to my executive team because they've been awesome. CJ, she's been with me since my old restaurant. She does all our catering and events. She's tenacious, if nothing else, man. She's awesome. Her events are great. We do lots of weddings. Amy, she's our VP of Ops. I couldn't do anything without her. She's great, thorough, thoughtful, nice. She's such a good person. Mateus, Director of Barbecue Ops, Dobo. He's great. Who am I missing in there? My wife, of course. She's our marketing. She's our chief marketing officer. I feel like I'm missing somebody, but I think that's it. I think I got it.
What's the best? What's your favorite social?
Oh, I got it.
Who?
Angela. I didn't forget you.
There you go, Angela.
Marketing. She's on our executive team also. She is killer. She's going to be a rock star.
What's your favorite social platform? Where can people connect with you?
I'm mainly on Instagram. I'm going to start dabbling on TikTok eventually. I think what's important about any kind of that social media stuff is honesty.
Yeah.
Really, for me, that's... So, you know, we're always putting stuff up at the smoke shops, always put stuff up. I put up stuff sometimes, you know, a fair amount. But I like it. It's interesting. I think it's important not to believe the hype sometimes.
Andy Husbands, the truth speaker. I really appreciate you coming on the show, sharing your story. If you guys want to connect with me, it's at Sean P. Walchef, SHAWNPWALCHEF, Instagram, LinkedIn, any of the platforms. We care about you. As always, stay curious, get involved, and don't be afraid to ask for help. I'll catch you guys next week.